supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
We're getting a sense of the size of the universe. Let's get an accounting with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Billions and billions, Derek?
You know, I think Carl Sagan would be shocked and amazed himself to come to the realization that modern-day astronomers have come to about the number of galaxies that appear to be in the universe. Recently, an astronomer, astrophysicist actually at Space Telescope Science Institute, Mario Livio, was thinking about this and has put out what is now known as an acceptable range for the estimated number of galaxies in the universe, somewhere between 100 billion and 200 billion galaxies.
Not stars.
But collections of stars, galaxies.
But it does beg the question, what if there were, instead of 200 billion, 500 billion or 800 billion? Does it also mean that there is a limit to the size of the universe?
Yes. No. There's a lot of work to be done in there still. Well, as we look at what we see in the sky, several things are true. We can count galaxies in regions of the sky and get an estimate that way of how many galaxies, you know, could be there in the universe as we understand it. Then we can also look at how the universe itself seems to be expanding, and that's looking at distant galaxies and noticing their what's called recessional velocity, the speed with which they seem to be moving away from each other, and that can help us calculate some about what the volume of the universe could be and what the population must be.
That matter is neither created nor destroyed, does that imply that all this inventory, all this stuff was present at the onset, at the Big Bang?
That's the way the theory goes, is that all of this matter in a different form was there when it all began and then turned into what we now know as this matter. So that even tells you something about the nature of what that stuff was way back then, because it had to contain everything that we know of now in some form or another, along with all the forces awarded to this universe, which is, of course, the holy grail of astrophysicists to best understand the actual beginning point of everything we know of as the universe.
With holidays ahead this week, what's the correlation again between the nearby stuff of the solar system and our calendar?
Well, it's interesting how all this locks together because, you know, there's the solar calendar, the lunar calendar, the Julian calendar, the Gregorian calendar, all of these different calendars, which in many ways, several of the ones I've mentioned so far, are human constructs that help us mark time and are unrelated to, not exactly related to the solar calendars or the lunar calendars. And where that leaves us is this. This coming Sunday is Easter. And that has very, very strict laws and sort of constraints for which Sunday it can actually be. So the simple way that we always describe this is that it's the first Sunday after the first full moon following the vernal equinox. So we had the first day of spring last week. As it turns out, Friday this week is the first full moon. So the immediately following Sunday, April 1st, happens to be Easter. Now, the coincidence of the two, April Fool's Day and Easter, is sort of on the rare side. The last time it happened was 1956, not that long ago. Next time is 2029, then 2040, and then there's a 68-year break when it doesn't occur again until the year 2170. So enjoy the confluence this year.
If not religion or spirituality, can we add a little mysticism to the mix?
Yes, you actually can allow the mysticism, and it comes like this. Ancient observers might have thought it to be sort of mystic, but what we're speaking of is that on Easter Sunday morning, 5:30 to 6:15 a.m., the sky, if it's clear, will allow us to see the two planets, Mars and Saturn, as they come to a near conjunction, we're actually seeing this close approach between the two planets because of our motion around the solar system, around the sun, that allows us this view as we swing past these two slower moving planets. So it looks to us as if the two planets themselves are passing each other. It's actually we who are passing them in the sky as we continue on our course around the sun.
Hey, Derek, it looks like Hubble's going to have to hold on a little longer.
Indeed it will. Its replacement, James Webb Space Telescope, looks like it's going to have to endure another delay. 5 to 8 months, that pushes the launch back well into 2019, when it was actually supposed to launch late 2018. So now it's pushed back into 2019.
This is a real case, though, of better safe than sorry.
It truly is a better case. You know, the difference between Hubble Space Telescope and Webb Space Telescope, twofold really. First of all, is the intention of the mission. James Webb Space Telescope is going to be an infrared telescope looking for heat signatures at the very farthest reaches of the universe, as well as helping to gather more information about planets orbiting other stars using, again, infrared detectors. But in order to do this most efficiently, it has to be at a tremendous distance away from Earth, 1 million miles out. Now, Hubble Space Telescope, only 400-plus miles above the surface of Earth. That was much more of a visible telescope, towards the visible end of the spectrum. And because of its close proximity, space shuttle astronauts could reach it, thank goodness, to do much-needed repairs at the beginning of the mission and to upgrade the telescope consistently throughout its 25-year life.
Hey, we have a moment left with dark, clear skies. What's available to be seen overhead this week?
You know, the really cool thing is that Jupiter is now making its way above the horizon at 11 p.m. in the evening. It's made the transition from the pre-dawn sky into the evening sky, so you can stay up late and see it rather than get up early. But the reward for getting up early is that in the southern sky, pre-dawn, 5:30 to 6:15 a.m., you have Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars. The real cool thing is that Saturn and Mars are working their way towards their near conjunction that will happen next week, and you can watch them step by step as they march towards each other.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.